This is John Costa with my colleague Rob Watson on Spotlight and Arts. How are you, Rob?
I'm very well, thank you, John.
Cool.
I'm very well. It might be helpful if I turn the microphone on.
Oh, well, there you go, mate. It's always a pleasure to work with a professional. What can I say? And this week's recording, Spotlight and Art, I'm talking to someone. I've heard of this organisation before, but I've never actually met Rhys Loftus. Rhys, how are you?
I'm grand, thank you very much. Good. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you for coming in. Appreciate it. Now, as with all things that relate to Leicester, if you use the bike park, yeah, everybody knows Anton. I said to Anton, you can't ever leave the bike park. Everybody knows Anton. And Anton was our very first guest on our podcast when we started doing this a couple of months ago. So it's good. I feel like we've closed the circle now by bringing on someone that also I've met and was introduced to me through Anton. So tell me a little bit about the Brotherhood Legion. Where did it come from? What was your motivation behind starting it?
Yeah, I would. And thank you to Anton. Yeah, just to bring, you know, to show some gratitude. He's put me on, and he's a great middleman for good connections. Anton is within the city. And the Brotherhood Legion is a community interest company for men's mental health. So we put on a load of free services built around conversation, movement and inclusion. And we've been running now for 2 years. We're multi-award winning, city-based and national-based. You know, over the 2 years, we've done around about 65 plus events and worked with over 100 self-employed professionals, independent organizations and companies, just to basically give back and then bring together the community. If it's, you know, homeless walk and talks for our big events, or giving out free haircuts and clothes and food to, you know, the public, and then doing Christmas dinners. But then if it comes down to our kind of socials for the men, where it's like pool socials, gamer socials, big hikes, big camps, and then our weekend sessions that we run throughout the year, which are our coffee and a chat on Saturday, and then our physical on a Sunday. So there's a lot that goes on.
And is the key to any of these events, groups, gatherings and stuff, is it about conversations and mutual support around mental health and wellbeing?
Yeah, I think it's about that. And I think the core is for me is connection. I think a lot of us, when it comes to our mental health, when it comes to, you know, the difficulties and the challenges that we face, is that a lot of them, people are facing them on their own and they feel alone. They feel isolated. I think today in society, we're the most isolated society that there is anyway, with, you know, being abducted by our phones. So I think one of the most powerful things about this is bringing the community together and getting the community to acknowledge the conversation of mental health. And then to, you know, break the stigma and then, you know, but support people when they're looking for support, but also, just get together. It doesn't always have to be about what's going on in the worst parts of your mind. It can just be a step outside of your life and having a good time.
I guess if I was to create like the almost like a comedy sketch, it would be like four or five blokes sitting around a table in a pub, you know, each with a pint and with a little label above their heads about what particular thing is going on and causing them stress at that particular moment. And then you guarantee that they could be there for 2 hours, have two drinks each and not talk about a single one of those flags. Oh, they'll be talk about everything else.
Yeah.
And for me, I always think that when you hear about men's mental health projects and stuff like that, what I liked about yours when I was looking and doing the research was the fact that it was about the conversations and putting people in situations that broke down the barriers to that conversation, which is, yeah, sometimes it's actually easier to talk to a stranger about how you're feeling than it is someone that is a close friend or you've known since school. Are they the kind of testimonials that you get? Because I know I've read one that was on your Instagram about someone just saying, well, actually, you just listened, you just helped, and you were just there at the right time. It must be quite exhausting for you to do that.
It's, well, starting with the, you know, we're professionals at deflecting the, you know, the serious conversation as men. You know, we'll always want to skim over the top and just kind of have a laugh and just kind of just keep ourselves busy. And it was something I was talking to about with another gentleman not so long ago, is like the whole, you know, when somebody sadly does pass away from suicide, you know, one of the famous quotes is, you know, I wish you would have told me and we could have sat down and spoke about it instead of me carrying a coffin. When the reality is, the hard truth is that we've seen the signs, we've seen the proof long before it happens most of the time. It's just that most,
if we're honest with ourselves, yeah, we'll have seen those signs.
You know, yeah. And it's one of those cases of we as individuals, men, find it hard to talk about our trauma, our pain, never mind sit down with another man and try and communicate with his. it's a very uncomfortable situation. So we try and steer away from that conversation, not because we don't care. It's just because we don't know how to communicate properly with ourselves in that situation. So we do what everybody else does, and we deflect, or we use and we self-medicate with alcohol, with drugs, or with different bits to, kind of just pull the rug over it. But so we've created that space. We've created that space where men, they feel trusted and they feel safe in sharing something, and they feel also that it's communal. So they're not the only ones. They come to the realization that they're not the only ones struggling, and that they're not going to be judged. And that's one of the biggest things. It's the judgment.
It's an interesting thing you talk about there, isn't it? Judgment about, you know, what is the people's perception of me not being, you know, the man, the breadwinner, the kind of the strong one, and all this sort of stuff. And of course, this, you've got this sort of toxic masculinity and stuff. You see it come out and manifest itself in many ways. But, you know, it's about just being honest with how you're feeling. I mean, next Monday is like a year since my dad died. You know what I mean? So I'm probably the only one who's not cried. Okay. I'm not sure why. Maybe you think to yourself, is it something wrong with me? You know what I mean? Is it something I've done? You know, was it my relationship with my dad, which I thought was quite good? So I'm kind of like supporting my mum. So I think once I've got her over next Monday, maybe that's when I need to go off and do a long walk and stare at some water and maybe try and cry a bit. But I think everybody's different, the different pressures. And sometimes it's not about being a father. It's not about, you know, being a partner. Sometimes it's just the pressures of the world to be a particular way and fit in and stuff like that. So what was the kind of catalytic moment for you, the catalyst of thinking, actually, I'm going to do the Brotherhood Legion? You know, forget about everything that's come since. What was the moment that for you that you thought, actually, I'm going to set something up because I can?
I think it's literally them few words at the end. It was because I can. I've always, well, let's take it back. You know, my passion for people and my passion for community and giving back and supporting people goes way back to when I was a kid. And I was, you know, I'd left school with no grades. I went to college, bunked out of college after a month, didn't really understand what I was doing in my life. I was going to some City and Guilds paint and decorating course where we were just smoking weed and just being nuisances. And a lady from the council come up to me in the street, and I lived in Braunston, and she offered me this opportunity to go and do this course in the arts, where they were taking kids from disadvantaged areas and putting them into creative studies. Now, she come back to me 2 weeks later, shout out to Diane Ford, the angel's no longer with us, but she said it folded, they didn't get the funding. But because you're the first on the list, I'm going to put you forward to Anne Oliver's stage school, which was her friend. So I ended up getting an opportunity to go and get an audition there. And then I got the audition, I got a 3-year scholarship, and then my community, Braunston, they paid for all my dance gear. I was in the paper, you know. So, you know, from that point there, my whole life changed. And a big staple of that was, you know, the love and the consideration of this woman putting a name out there for me, you know, to her friend who owned a private dance college. And then my community as a whole, you know, reaching out and supporting me as well. So there's a big embedment of support and how much one person can change your whole life. Yeah, so that's a big core of it, I think. And then obviously the drugs, the alcohol, the other substance abuse that I've been through, and knowing that, you know, when you go through pain and you're a good communicator, and if you can just, if you've got the opportunity to alleviate or help somebody, then it becomes not an obligation, but it becomes kind of a service. Yeah.
Yeah. You feel like you're calling to.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, mate, you know, I'm in my late 50s, you know, I've been to prison about 20 years ago and stuff, you know, right place, wrong time, all that kind of stuff. And what you realize is when you talk to a lot of people that are in that environment, or, you know, young people that I've spoken to since, because probation or the police have asked me to have a chat with them, like, you know, it's about, you know, choices and where you are and the things like that. And I think there's lots of good people out there willing to give people opportunities. And I would say it's not about, oh, you're a success story, she saw you, you know, it was you were ready for that message.
Yeah.
And the fact that she kept going, even if someone else I picked it up and then dropped that ball.
Yeah.
I think this is the thing. It's not, there's no quick solutions. There's no quick answers. It's about consistency. So from your perspective as the Brotherhood Legion, is it about just being consistent and being out there all the time and doing things and having these groups and then running? And then that way people find you. Well, I've known you for ages. I've now found you at the right time when I'm ready to kind of buy what you're selling.
But that's consistency is key in anything to evolve, I believe, to get any success in it. The reason the group is it, the magnitude it is, because I don't sleep on it. I'm totally consistent with creating new events, the sessions. I always believe as well, when we started running the sessions, that I needed to do them every week, because, you know, people that need someone to go, if you miss them for a weekend, then they can just get lost again. And then I think even somebody went, people believe in you more when they can trust you. And then the reason I've got such a good community back in and people want to work with me, I've collaborated with all these people for no money, is because they've seen my work, they see the consistency and they believe and they trust in the journey and they know it's going to go to a good cause. And that goes with anything in life. You know, the more that we do it, if you're doing it 50% but 100% of the time, you're going to hit more wins than doing it 100% once at a time, you know? So yeah, and that's all of it. And when we talked about Diane in that thing, and I always think she, you know, she changed my life for coming into me on that street. But also we do have to talk about, you know, I was an avid dancer. I danced on the street. I danced at the carnival in the local dance troupe. Everybody knew me as the kid that danced. So I also attracted that. So you have to kind of move into what you want to be and who you want to be and then embody it.
So Reese, tell me, you've got an event coming up at the Little Theatre that I've seen you've been promoting and stuff like that. So where does that come from? What's the reason for that? Did you meet the Little Theatre and they've given you the space? So you kind of, is it you've got the people together? So you think, well, actually now I now need to put the event on. What was your thinking behind doing the event?
Well, this is our second variety show. Last year we did it at the Y Theatre. And one of my inspirations for that is, and it's always been, you know, I'm a man of the arts. I'm an ex-dancer. Well, I'm still a dancer. I do adverts and all sorts of stuff, but I'm still I'm a professional dancer. My whole life's been around acting, singing and performing. And I've always wanted to kind of give a stage to people to also to elevate them as well. So that was a big part of last year's at the Y Theatre. And it's all about variety of doing different events as well throughout the year. And then it's having fun with life. It's like, for me, it's like these events that I put on, it's also, I do them, you know, if I get inspired by certain people, but it's about enjoying it and trying to have as much fun. But this event here coming up at the Variety Night at the Little Theatre, the Legion of Litters, because a man called Gary reached out to me and he was like, I want to do an event for you as well. So he was like, I want to do another variety show like you did last year. So shout out to Gary, who's took the lead on this, and he's literally put it all together and he's just been backwards and forwards with me. And the Little Theatre have been so kind to give us the theatre on a deal of a percentage of the tickets. So everything's gone really well and it's going to be an incredible show. So anybody listening to this before, when it goes out, come and see us, come and look at for the Legion at the Little Theatre this 13th of July. We have some guys from Studio 79. We have, you know, actors from Emmerdale doing monologues and we have some incredible singers, magicians. It's going to be just packed with entertainment and it's for an amazing cause.
So do you think things like putting on events like this, entertainment, you know, giving people the opportunity, if you like, to be, you know, Britain's Got Talent or, you know, the X Factor and any of these things, there's still a need for that kind of stuff because then you're able to get out that message about men's mental health and stuff. Do you find like it's a great way of breaking those barriers down because people are relaxing and then they're more open to talking to you? People must pull you to one side and tell you their story or, you know, you've inspired them and stuff. That must help really keep you going.
Yeah, it's using the movement that I've built to as a multi-facet machine. I want to inspire people. I want to inspire people to break down thought beliefs. I want to inspire people to dream big and to push themselves out of their comfort zone. Like that's a big part of my dream and my passion is to, you know, help people believe in themselves. And that's what, you know, the men's mental health thing is about. And also, you know, we run a women's group, the Sisterhood _ Midlands. You know, I evidently, you know, the men have been my driving force because I'm a man. I can connect with them. But I also do a lot of service for women because I just want everybody. You know, everybody in the community, young, old, man, woman, no matter what color or ethnicity you are, I want you to win. So I want, and if I can plant a little seed of belief, a little bit of inspiration and help you get up and go, then I'll give you a stage, then this is the best way to live life.
So when did you first realize that you wanted to dance? I mean, you know, my partner Tina, she's from Braunston and stuff like that. So, you know, there's a certain way of acting, isn't there? You know, when you're growing up and all that sort of stuff. Now it's probably more acceptable, like, you know, because of, I don't know, social media and, you know, diversity, the dance group, or maybe Billy Elliot. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, where did it come from?
Yeah, I was a bit before them as well. Mm-hmm. So, but I went to locking and I went to breakdancing after school at 14 when I first started. And it was just my friend saying, do you want to come to this? Because it was it. the Echo Watch, or what's it called? It's called the Watershed now. It was on Knob Road next to the football ground, the Leicester ground. And it was basically a youth club, and you'd come and everybody would teach each other breakdancing, and the instructor were called Rolo. And then I used to go there, and I first started, you know, learning how to lock and pop, watched Beat Street, Breaking One, Breaking Two, and all them old breakdancing movies. And then I got into it then, and I realized I had an act for it. And then I just, you know, and I was in the carnival, and then I joined the street dance, and I was known as like the little white boy that could dance, and I became really popular. So I'd go to like nappy nights at Zanzibar, and I'd be doing like the crip walk, and I just kind of embodied this new kind of, kind of social, you know, elevation, and really ran with it. And I used to love it. So, you know, it was a thing that made me popular, and it got me women in when I was younger, and, you know, and yeah, so it charged my soul. So, I just love it. I just love it. It's more natural for me to dance than it is to stand still.
Excellent. I love that. I love that honesty as well. Mm. You know? So this is John Costa with Rob Watson on Spotlight on Art. So Rob, I'm going to bring you in here. Do you ever danced, sang, creative at school or anything like this? I felt like I'm about to confess something now, but I'm not sure whether you wanted to do it as well.
Well, it was dominated by football, wasn't it, at my school? But no. But what I was interested in is the stereotypical roles, because my nephew was when he was a youngster, he was in a dance group, and it socialised him really well with women. Whereas a lot of the boys who just hang around with the boys who play football, actually they missed out. You know, people push back against it a bit and kind of say, well, it's a bit girly, you know, it's a bit too feminine. It's like, but actually, you know, when you get to that 14, 15, you've got that natural ability to engage with women because you've hung around women. And it's, what drives that? What, in your experience, you know, what kind of, keeps, because the result is that you end up with blokes who cannot move outside of that. You seem to be quite, your thinking is a bit more flexible, whereas a lot of blokes, it's like my brother, I would use an example of somebody can't live without women, and he's had multiple relationships which don't go anywhere in the long term, but he also kind of, he's got quite fixed roles, perceptions. And how do you get past that?
Well, I think when I first started as well, you know, I was controversial because I was a street lad. I was involved in, I used to have my postcode on the side of my cap. I was a bit outrageous as well, going to parties and used to get into trouble. So people didn't really give me that much stick because they used to think it was cool because I was locking and popping, and it wasn't really like I was going to ballet or anything like that. So it was a different scene. But what I want to talk about there is, let me go a little bit back on that as well. Is it possibly because, I didn't grow up with my dad in the house. My mum, me and my three brothers, my mum brought us up. We did have men that were in the house, but they weren't our fathers. So, you know, my mum is a pinnacle of who I am. You know, I'm an embodiment of a reflection of my mum. So I've seen a very powerful woman go through a lot of stuff. So I have a lot of respect for a lot of women, and I understand from their perspective as well how hard life can be. And I have two sisters. So it definitely does open your eyes up to the differences between men and women. And I think you can, if you don't get that interaction, you can become very limited in your interaction and your social skills. But what's funny though is one of our gentlemen in the group, he was suffering from a porn addiction. And what we did is I took him to dancing. Yeah, and this is not so long ago when we're older. So and he's in like his mid-20s, and I took him to salsa in the evenings, and then he got obsessed with it. Yeah, and now he just loves it and he does it all the time. But his addiction just kind of faded away very quickly, and it was because, not because he was having an overstimulant lust effect with these women. It's because he was having a genuine connection. Social experience without lust, without anything. And that was soothing. And that, once it goes back to that connection essence, it was soothing that void, and then also allowing him to respect women in a way that he has to have a perimeter, and he has to know how to communicate with them without thinking about sex or without thinking about dating. That's a powerful thing about dance. It's a powerful thing about social constructs of moving together. Is that you do get that them oxytocins, you know, that we lack. And then, you know, once we stay away from something, we lose confidence in understanding it. And then the moment we do that, we get become scared of it. And then if we've had bad experiences, then they leave stains on us and then we can't have to move forward in it. There's another example. There was a gentleman, his mum left his dad and then his girlfriend cheated on him with his friend. Yeah, not his boyfriend, his friend. And they left a really bad cut on him. And they used to talk about women like quite provocative, like, well, you just bad words about women. So I said to him, I said, look, from now on, I don't want to hear it. I said, you might think it, but I don't want to hear it come out of your lips. Yeah, from now on, that's a challenge for you. And he come back to me a month later, I've got a date. I've gone out for a while. I've not been out for years. He says, I saw some woman, she clearly like was coming on to me, and then we took each other's number because he's a good looking lad, really good looking lad, strapping, tall lad. And it's totally opened and then rewired his mind again because now he was scared, but now he's dropped that guard and he understands that, you know, the way that we're talking has a big effect on the way that, you know, we walk and how we live our lives.
Now, it's interesting what you're talking about there because we're, you know, the whole thing with, you know, schools and incels and all those sorts of things. I don't necessarily want to dive down into any of that kind of stuff, but more about positive things that, you know, young men are encouraged to do. And I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when I went into the Young Offenders Institute here and was talking to a group of young lads and things like graphic noveling and animation, that was probably the last time anybody said anything positive to them at school. And then they got to secondary school and then just became the little terrors they are now. And here they are, you know, locked up. It's about being in those places, having those kind of opportunities to be creative without anybody else necessarily judging you from, oh, that's this, that's this. It's doing it for fun, you know, and just enjoying it. So as a dancer, when you dance now, you know, you were talking about adverts and maybe work and things like that. Are you still able to dance for you? Can you still connect with that young boy who was 14 dancing on the street with like maybe your mates around you clapping your Billy Elliot style, I guess, what I'm thinking of there. I love watching those little clips on YouTube that you then bring into your work.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I'll be in the gym and a good tune will come on and you'll see me a little two-step or, you know, just at the bus stop. It's just if there's music on and it's going to come out of me somewhere. I mean, there's going to be a movement, but an expression. And yeah, forever. When music sits with you like that, it will never leave you. And then if you can connect with it on a certain way like that as well, you can use it as a tool all the time. Like there's many times I just go in the studio on my own. So I'll just book the studio out of the gym. And then if there's something, and it's purposely sometimes I go in there, if I feel like there's a kind of a heavy weight that I've kind of been going through something and I kind of just need to, you know, have a release and expression, and I'll dance. I'll put some music on that is that embodies a certain sort of emotion, and then I'll just freestyle to it. And then, everyone have fun, boom, I'll put something light on and I'll have a jam, you know, put a different energy into it.
And is that how you help with your own mental health and well-being? Because I mean, there is now, I would say, from everything you've said, you know, the Brotherhood Legion, the Sisterhood, doing this event at the little theatre, there's now an expectation that, you know, when Reese is involved, something's going to happen. And that's a lot of expectation. How do you deal with your own mental health and well-being? Is it through going and doing something like dancing, through booking the studios?
Yeah, 100%. Even because
it's easy to forget about you.
Yeah. And it does get like that sometimes. Even, you know, just recently there was a new experience that happened within the group. And I've been doing this for a long time now, so it's not normal that I get a new experience. But, you know, ringing the ambulances to go out to people's houses is not something that's new to me now. Getting calls and messages that people want to take their own lives, or, you know, people that have taken their own lives, and talking to friends and them no longer being with us is very heavy. It's very difficult. Sitting with people as they open up and tears come down their face is extremely hard. And you do embody that. You do take some of that energy in. So there are individuals that I will ring up and I like unpack stuff with, just because the more important is just to unpack it, get it out of your system. But, you know, my Friday classes, I do a dance fit class on Friday and a hit class on Friday. And all that accumulating of like kind of weight that I build up from Monday to Friday, I get it out of my system.
You detox yourself doing that.
And then I charge myself up again with a class that I'm in and stuff. And it's just, that's my release and my revive throughout the weekend. And it gives me that energy to kickstart the weekend. But I take on a lot. You know, I do a full-time job. I do the two charities and I'm in higher education. But, you know, I love it. I love what I do. And it's a part of, you know, where I'm going. And you just remind myself sometimes when it does get a bit too much and I feel like there's a lot on my plate, you can't complain about having a lot on your plate when you ask God to eat, you know? So this is one of those things.
Mm. I like the way you've combined this kind of physical and mental health, and you're able to share that story with people. I mean, I'll be busy all week. You know, I might cycle in from Saffron Lane and do all that sort of stuff. But, you know, Sunday morning, I get up at 5 o'clock Sunday morning and I go for a 7 to 10 mile run each week. You know, I'm training for the Leicester Half Marathon. I've not done one for a couple of years. So for me, you know, at my age, it hurts, don't get me wrong, but that's my physical thing that I do. I like the fact that you've combined your mental and physical side. For you, is it okay? Are you balanced? Would you say that you've got the balance right?
Yeah, well, I'm so far so good. Yeah, I definitely believe that what I'm doing is working for me. Just because it is, well, I do, like I said, there's a lot that comes my way sometimes. And yes, I get burnt out sometimes, but I think it's going to happen to me. But I do, like, when I had to unpack it the other week with this gentleman, I rang two people and one of them answered and I said, look, I just need to tell you something. And I just spoke about like how I was feeling and just kind of really in a safe space opened up, you know, and just got it off my chest. And then with the, you know, training with meditation and then with the dancing, that's the other ways to just get that release. But I'm a very honest person. You know, I'm a very, when we talk to the lads and that night, and I think that's one of the powers of, you know, authenticity is one of the truest powers of like release. It's like, I'm not afraid to talk about that I'm having a bad day. I'm not afraid to talk about if I have a relapse. I'm not afraid to talk about, you know, what's on my mind. So therefore, I'm not holding too much on all the time. I'm not carrying weight.
So Reece, final section now. Thanks very much for coming in and speaking to us today. It's been really insightful and it's nice to find someone that's got that well-being perspective from a physical and a mental perspective. Now, Anton put us in touch. We'll go full circle on Anton because you're talking about this lady, Albina, who's looking to a local artist and photographer, is great, who's helping a lady who's poorly called Carol to fulfill her dream of having this art exhibition. And so Anton's like, oh, you need to speak to John. And then when we got in touch and I was like, oh, yeah, I know her. We're already doing something in a couple of weeks' time and later on in the session. So it was great. And what I like is the fact that people like ourselves are able to provide opportunities for other people to fulfill what they want to do. Now, with Carol, it's a dream to have an art exhibition because her husband who passed away, she'll have some of his art as well. It's great. And I think for me, that was the reason I said to Rob about getting you on the podcast was because we'd found each other. We would never normally meet, but through Anton at the bike park, which I think is great, you know, his job as a facilitator, brought us together because he realizes that we're both people that like to help others. I mean, how do you... And I'm going to ask you this because it's a personal question to me. How do you not help everybody? Because this is something I've always struggled with. Rob will know back to Citizen's Eye. People come to you for help and you're like, well, of course I can help, so I will. And you're like, well, hang on, what about me? Maybe I'm not in the right frame of mind for helping and stuff. So how do you deal with that? There we go. I'm going to leave you with this, the final question.
I think you figured it out somewhere along the line, didn't you? That's how you kind of get burnt out, I think. But I think obviously...
because you know you can.
Yeah.
And that's really hard, isn't it? I've come to you because I know you can help me or you can help someone that I know. And you turn around and go, but I'm not at the right place. It's not at the right time. Or, you know, how do you deal with it? Because like, I challenge myself with that all the time.
It literally sits for me. It's that conversation of like, if I can make it happen and, you know, it's in my scope of practice, in my capabilities, then I'm like, okay, then look, let's try and make this happen. But like, if it's because talking on terms of sometimes people come to me and, you know, with the group and stuff, they come to me and they've got, you know, quite serious addictions or quite, you know, mental health conditions. My job is to social prescribe because we're a neutral group. So my job is to get you the help that you need or point you in the right direction. So that there sometimes is the most you can do. And I kind of just have to accept that because at the end of the day is I'm only capable to do in my professional scope and in my my own well-being scope. So I kind of had to come to terms with building boundaries within the group that way because I can't answer my phone at 1 o'clock in the morning. I can't do this, you know, it past hours and et cetera. But when it comes, there's different levels to it. Like Carol's, it's like, you know, I was scrolling down on social media and I see that it's her dream to want to do a art show. And I know I can make that happen, even though I've already got four events on, you know.
And that's why I contacted her. I did exactly the same thing. You know what I mean? Someone make your dream come true. And I was like, well, I've got an event coming up, which you can be in that.
Yes.
And it's a photography event. And I was like, well, Albina takes the photographs exactly the same as the artwork that Carol's got. Then we can support each other. Yeah. So I was even changing the rules as I went along because it was my event to make sure that I could accommodate her dream, you know. And I think it's, thinking about putting yourself first isn't being selfish. It's thinking about, I can help you because I know that I can do it without necessarily damaging myself. Yeah. And that's something that I've had to learn and is a real, and I'd like to think that anybody that listens to this who naturally helps people and all that, and probably has not thought about themselves, just because I can, should I? It's about thinking about yourself, because as soon as you can help yourself and protect yourself, you're able to help more people.
Well, we give a better service and we can provide more when we actually we're in a better place. Because there are times, you know, I'm a human being and I'm a work in process that I will have bad days, you know, and or you know, last year especially, I was back in CA for a bit, fell out of a relationship. Well, I kind of ended it, but and then I kind of fell into a lot of old emotions, and they sent me back into spiraling into a bad path. But, my addiction, I'm constantly assessing. I'm constantly trying to realign myself and become addicted to kindness and happiness, and you know, in the work that I'm doing now. But you know, I can't do all this if I'm in that place. So you know, if I start wobbling, I do have to slow things down and then go, okay, then I need to get myself realigned before I start taking on more weight on my shoulders. But also at the same time, it's this work that keeps me accountable. It's changed my life.
Brilliant. Reese, thank you for taking the time to speak to us.
Thank you very much for having me on. Yes.